In yesterday's gospel, Jesus spoke about what was hidden from the wise and the learned and revealed to the childlike. And I pointed out yesterday the example of the three shepherds of Fatima, little children, to whom was revealed something that the clever and the wise, the learned, never understood. Well, then we get to today's saint, St. Francis Xavier, who is very wise and learned. He's a very clever man, well-educated. And yet, to him too was revealed what is revealed to the childlike. He became childlike. So I was struck by this saint, perhaps because in our pilgrimage we met so many saints in Spain. Spain is a land of saints. And St. Francis Xavier is said to have been born in Spain. But I don't remember seeing any evidence of Francis Xavier anywhere we went on our pilgrimage. We saw Ignatius of Loyola, who was the mentor of Francis Xavier, and we saw many other saints, of course. The most famous of the Spanish saints that I had in mind before going there were St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross, and we met them too. But we never saw Francis Xavier. So I was reflecting a little bit about this, and I looked at his life. Well, he was born in the northern part of Spain, the Basque region, and from there he went further north. He went into France. He went to what was the center of learning at the time, Paris. He went to the great universities of Paris in order to continue his education because he was a brilliant young man. And that's where he met Ignatius of Loyola, who had also gone to Paris to study. So these two Basque countrymen met in Paris, and it was there that Ignatius introduced Francis Xavier to the interior life, not just the intellectual life, but the life in which we submit ourselves to God. He guided him through the spiritual exercises in some form, and Francis Xavier discovered something much more precious than learning. He discovered Jesus Christ and the adventure of following him and serving him, which led eventually to his going to the what was called the Orient at that time, the East. He went to India as a missionary. He was already a Jesuit priest. He went to India, spent years in India, and then on to Japan and some other stops in the East, in Asia, here in Asia. He didn't make it to the Philippines. But Francis Xavier is a very interesting character, and his partner Ignatius and the others, they were canonized together, Ignatius of Loyola and Francis Xavier. Ignatius was 15 years older than Francis Xavier. Their contemporaries were Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross. I looked up their dates. So Ignatius was the oldest. He was born in 1491, and the golden age of Spain starts in 1492, right? But the 16th century in Spain was definitely a golden age, an age of exploration, yes, and of enrichment and of conquest, but also of evangelical zeal. The rise and spread of the Jesuits are an example, or the reform movement of Teresa of Avila, another example, or the great Spanish mysticism and literature and architecture and everything. That was definitely the age. So Ignatius is the oldest, then the second was Francis Xavier. He was born in 1506. Teresa of Avila was born 9 years later, 1515. John of the Cross was the youngest of them all, 1542. So he was 27 years younger than Teresa. Anyway, they didn't meet each other. Of course, these two pairs met each other, Ignatius and Francis Xavier. Teresa and John of the Cross met each other. But there were other saints that they met along the way. Just an extraordinary age. It was also an age in Europe that was collapsing because of the impact of the Protestant Reformation. Remember, people by the hundreds or by the thousands were leaving the church or being separated from the church and joining the different Protestant denominations. So at the same time that Europe was getting fragmented and the church was losing members, the church was extending itself to all over the world, not only to the Far East, but also to the so-called New World. And Spain was one of the key countries in that extension of the gospel to the world. The Philippines being one of the places where the gospel was brought in the 16th century. And it's still here, thanks be to God. So we see the beauty of how God works, the mysterious ways in which God works to anybody who is willing to be childlike and accept the richness of the gospel. So yesterday's gospel still applies, even though Ignatius and Francis Xavier were brilliant, learned men. And the Jesuits have that reputation of being brilliant, learned men. But if they're going to be effective for the kingdom, they have to be childlike. That's the way to be of service to the kingdom. Okay, let's turn to today's readings. They're built on the theme of the banquet. Yesterday, the prophecy in Isaiah spoke about the Messiah to come, this great King of justice and peace. Today's reading, today's prophecy from Isaiah speaks not so much about the Messiah himself, but about what things will be like when the Messiah reigns. And at that time, the days of the Messiah, there's going to be this great banquet, a feast of rich food and choice wines, juicy rich food and pure choice wines. And the Lord is going to destroy even death itself. So there's this image of extraordinary abundance and restoration on the holy mountain. That's the prophetic description from Isaiah. I don't know what the Jews thought about this when they heard about a great banquet and a time when death would be destroyed and tears would be wiped from everybody's faces. When the hand of the Lord will rest on this mountain, I'm not sure what they thought, but they knew that it was something good and something to look forward to. They longed for the coming of the Messiah. It's not hard for us to imagine a great banquet because we've all been to banquets. The scriptural imagery of banquets is often associated with weddings because at weddings you always have a banquet if you can. And a wedding banquet is another image for eternal life. But there's no mention of a wedding in these readings, but the banquet image is easy for us to imagine. Well, just last night there was a Christmas party here. Some of our members, first party of the season, as far as I know. Anyway, I was invited to the food part. And there was a table of rich food. Huh? Rich food, I didn't see any choice wine, but there was juicy, rich food. Maybe they brought the wine out after I left. I'm not sure what happened, but it was a banquet. It was a festive celebration. You can't have a festive celebration without food, without an abundance of food. In the gospel, Jesus reveals himself as the fulfillment of this prophetic image. Someone who provides a banquet and great restoration, although in the gospel, restoration first, healing of the lame, the blind, the deformed, the mute, and many others, and then this feast, this abundant feast on the mountain. So Jesus is revealing himself by doing these things as the Messiah. One who is providing what only God can provide, healing, restoration, and then abundance. And the people recognize it. The crowds were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the deformed made whole, the lame walking, and the blind able to see. And they glorified the God of Israel. Right response. Right response. The people who had this experience had an advent, fulfillment of their advent longing. They saw God present among them. They didn't know that Jesus was God, but they knew God was at work in him. Then came this concern of Jesus for the hungry. They had been with him 3 days. They don't have any food. And Jesus says, I can't dismiss them. I want to feed them. The disciples, of course, say, well, we can't do it. We don't have enough. And this is always the natural response. we've had this response ourselves. We're preparing for a big banquet on Saturday and again on Monday to celebrate our 50th anniversary. And we're aware that more and more people are saying they're going to come, might be over 200 people. And we say, well, we can't fit 200 people. We can't feed 200 people. Well, that's the natural response. But the Christian response is, well, yeah, we'll just give them what we have. We'll give them what we have. Everyone's welcome. Everyone's welcome. Okay, so we'll have a banquet on Saturday. Everybody's welcome. You can come Saturday morning and again on Monday afternoon. But Jesus reveals that he doesn't rely on the abundance of man. He relies on the willingness of man to give the little that we have, the 7 loaves in this case. He just needed a few loaves in order to feed 4,000 men, not counting the women and the children. It's a miraculous feeding. Now, we see this not only as a fulfillment of the prophecy, as an indication of what in Advent we are longing for, it's also a reminder to us of what the banquet we have already received in the Eucharist. In the Eucharist, the miracle is not the multiplication, usually not the multiplication of the hosts, but the transformation of ordinary bread into the body and blood of Christ. What seems like a very plain, ordinary food becomes greater than any fine banquet, any rich food of a feast of rich food and choice wines. No, the best food of all, the eternal food, is the body and blood of Christ. And this is the banquet that the Lord makes available to us, even in Advent, even before we're celebrating the presence of the Lord, he's already with us. So our Advent journey is a time when we are fed by the Word, we're fed by Old Testament prophecies, we're fed by the Gospels, we're also fed by Jesus himself in the Eucharist. And he keeps multiplying himself. He keeps multiplying the loaves to feed countless thousands. We're included among those who benefit from the generosity of the Messiah.